Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Agents of Mace. Today, we're talking Ant-Man number one. It's just called Ant-Man. I feel like it's the same with that comic. When I was trying to look stuff up, I would type in Ant-Man, and it was just like everything Ant-Man all the time. And I was like, no, the movie Ant-Man. So we're talking the first movie, getting ready for Ant-Man Quantumania. Excuse me, Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. So this week we're going to be talking Ant-Man. Next week we'll talk Ant-Man and the Wasp. And then it will be time for Quantumania to be out. So get ready for all the stuff, all the confusion that comes with Ant-Man and Quantum Realm and time travel and blips and... I mean, it never ends. I mean, like, everything happens to Ant-Man. So, diving into this first movie, we get not only the legacy Ant-Man, we'll call him, Hank Pym, but we also get the new and now current Ant-Man. So we're starting off with two Ant-Men, which is an interesting place to be. Same with the Wasp. I know that that more fleshes out in the second movie, obviously. But we're in a situation where we have two. And it's kind of like a passing the torch movie mixed with a comedy heist movie. If that makes sense. Before we get too far into it, I guess, first thoughts? I'll let you start, Alicia.
My thoughts toward Ant-Man are still largely positive. I really feel like it's underrated amongst MCU folks because it is just sort of fun and funny. And so it's not one of the ones that people think of as being one of the better MCU movies, even though Paul Rudd is so universally adored and everybody is completely besotted with him. And if I had literally any complaint at all about either one of these movies, it's that they should have just kept Edgar Wright around to do both of them. That's it. That's all. I mean, and even with his, you know, supposed non-presence, aside from being a contributor to the screenplay and an executive producer, the first movie especially is pretty Edgar Wright-ish.
Yeah, true.
he likes weird flourishes in his movies, and I feel like that is very, very apparent there. But yes, these are both really, really fun, and I love all the characters, even if so far they haven't had the highest stakes, because the stakes have really been like Scott wants to be a good dad, he wants to be there for his daughter, which is not usually like world threatening types of stakes. But yeah, these are fun ones to return to. They're among the comfort movies of the MCU. You watch them on a rainy day.
Oh,
and it makes you happy.
Definitely. I 100% agree. I think that there's a real story being told, but also we get these like really funny characters. Like Scott Lang is a funny character. Luis, I mean, probably in my like top five comedy characters of movies. I love every time he explains anything, anytime he's on screen.
Yes, and that actor, I cannot remember his name right now, but he's mostly in dramatic stuff, and so every time I see him in a different movie, I'm like, oh, this is not my place.
He is played by Michael Peña.
Okay. That was what came to my mind, but I was like, I don't want to be wrong.
I love his character, and then also, like, they do a really good job of the torch passing in this series, where, you know, we're getting Hank Pym, classic first Ant-Man, and now we're getting Scott Lang, who is like a new Ant-Man, but we're seeing Hank like pass on the mantle to Scott, as opposed to we just get Scott Lang, he's Ant-Man. I guess it makes sense, because it would be weird to explain Pym particles without having Hank Pym. but I, you know, they could have worked some weird way around that. Seeing as how they already did that with the Quantum Realm, because in the comics, or the original comics, it wasn't called the Quantum Realm. It was called like the Microverse, or the like Micro Universe or something like that. It was like a tiny universe inside atoms, basically. But they couldn't use that, because when this movie was coming out, Sony had the rights to Fantastic Four, and the micro universe is a Fantastic Four thing. So they had to, we gotta change, call it something else. Yeah. And speaking of Edgar Wright, he wrote, or I guess like worked and co-wrote Ant-Man for like 5 years or something. It was like a really long time.
It was a long time, yeah.
And then I guess they, like, his co-writer left the project, and so they got a new co-writer, and he was like, nah, I'm out too. And so then they got a new director, and so then that's at the end of the movie, if you look, it's like there are like five credits for writer for Ant-Man, and it's a little confusing, because it's like, who wrote it and who helped write it and who had ideas that were written but didn't partake in the writing part. It's very confusing.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like Edgar Wright, ampersand this other person, and then this other group. Uh-huh. And I think one of the credited writers was Paul Rudd.
Yes.
Which I'm wondering if that's him taking a pass over the script and writing lines and all sorts of stuff, or if it's more like he wants to be involved and do like improv and put kind of his own, you know, Paul Ruddiness into his lines.
It is interesting when actors get those. Like when an actor gets a writing credit, I always want to know, like, did they write scenes or plot points, or was it just like they touched up their dialogue where they think it needed to be touched up?
Yeah, and I think that sort of thing happens a lot. Like with the first Iron Man, I remember Robert Downey Jr. saying basically he would look at the script every day, tell them he didn't like it, and that he wanted to say different lines. I don't think he got a writing credit for it, but I do think that he probably had a pretty significant contribution to what we actually see on screen. And with Ryan Reynolds, practically every movie he does now, I think he buys a script, but he goes in and he especially revisits dialogue because, you know, all of Ryan Reynolds' characters are pretty Ryan Reynolds-y.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he just, so, I mean, I he's love got a Ryan voice. Reynolds, but he plays
that's not shade.
Himself, the same character in every movie he's in now.
Mm-hmm. It's got nice Deadpool, Deadpool regular, and then mean Deadpool.
Yeah.
Those are how they go. It's one of those weird Hollywood things where scripts get passed between so many hands before the movie actually makes it onto screen. But again, it feels so much like Edgar Wright. I feel like that whoever took over was like, you know, this is pretty good.
Yeah, I really.
I think I'm gonna leave most of it.
It's one of those things, and I know we've said this in other things that have been rewritten too. It's like I really want to see I just want to read the script. Like, what was mm-hmm. it? What was different? I know a big thing that they kept was the scene where we get to see, like, the historical footage of Ant-Man and the Wasp fighting a bunch of guys during the Cold War. Like, that was part of Edgar Wright's original screenplay. Mm-hmm. I think that's how it was supposed to open. So I want to know, like, was Hank going to play a bigger role? Not that he doesn't play a big role in this movie, but he is sort of like a supporting character. Scott mm-hmm. is, like, very clearly the lead. So I want to know if maybe it was, like, more of a co-lead situation. Maybe he trains him a little bit more or something in the Edgar Wright one.
Yeah, and this one, he's very, very clearly the mentor for our protagonist, right. Which is an important role, but not the most important role.
Right. I know that this movie had a couple things in it that were cut, I believe, for time. And in the end, they didn't really use them anyway. But thinking back in time to when the first Ant-Man came out, we hadn't gotten Shang-Chi yet. There is a guy that's working for Darren who has a Ten Rings tattoo on his neck. Mm. And there was a scene that was cut that you would have seen it more clearly, but it was always supposed to be sort of like a hidden thing. But it was supposed to allude to, the Ten Rings are here, and they're trying to get this, you know, shrinking formula. And it's interesting because there's like two shots where you can see the guy, and you can kind of make out the top of the tattoo, and then they released the cut scene, so you can actually see the tattoo on the guy's neck. But it's like, oh, that's funny, because when I read that, I was like, oh, well, yeah, like, we know about Ten Rings, you know, uh-huh. Shang-Chi, they're the ones that, like, kidnap Tony, and it's, you know, yeah, sure, like, I got it. And then I realized, like, oh, no, that movie hadn't come out yet. We didn't know anything mm-hmm. about the Ten Rings yet.
We can totally retcon it, though. It can be this dude was, you know, trying to sneak around for,
yeah.
Wasn't successful.
No.
But it's okay.
Busted. we get a Star Wars reference in this movie. I had to read my chicken scratch notes. We get a Star Wars reference in this movie and another Disney reference. This is the second movie after Disney took over. And I believe the first one was Ultron. And what? That's why he sings Got No Strings on Me. In this movie, we get a Star Wars reference where when we're watching the Yellow Jacket commercial and in the big fight at the end of the movie with Yellow Jacket, whenever he shoots his lasers, the sound effect is the blaster sound effect from the AT-ATs in Star Wars. So that's funny. And then we also get later in the movie, Luis, when he's walking around, he's whistling It's a Small World After All. So really seeing Disney make sure that people know that Disney properties are fair game in the Marvel Universe now. And we've seen it more and more since. I mean, to the point where, like, now it's weird when there's not a Disney reference in something Marvel at some point, you know? A movie, a song, something.
They've got all that IP. They might as well. If you've got it, flaunt it, basically.
Yeah. Oh, and they do. There's a bit of, I would say, harsh violence that happens in this movie, along with it being funny, that seem almost like shock and awe moments. There's a part where Darren kills a guy by shrinking him without a suit. And
oh, yeah, that was gross.
Yeah, and he turns into like a little wad of gum on the ground. It's intense. And when they're talking about shrinking the goat, the whole time you're like, oh my God, not the goat.
Yes, not the goat.
It's a very very Jurassic Park moment where you're like, oh, the goat. But the goat's fine. The goat gets shrunk and is fine. We won't talk about all the goats before that goat. Or that one guy that we see. And then also Darren himself, when he dies at the end, it's pretty intense. It's not like a, oh, we got him. It's like a, oh, he shrinks into
himself. they threw around that whole, like, yeah, if you use this stuff too much, it kind of breaks your mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, Hank and Scott have both been using the stuff for a while, so that's a little bit alarming, because he goes so crazy that he starts, like, threatening a six-year-old girl for fun.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being mean to goats and people.
It is interesting. So I want to talk a little bit about Ant-Man's abilities, because they talk about it's very convenient power, right? In the movie, they talk about a little bit of some of the things, but then very quickly contradicts those things throughout the whole movie. One of them is pretty big. So what happens when you put the suit on and use the Pym particles is you can shrink and you can later, as we see, grow, seemingly at will. And it's all about displacing atoms. But no matter what, you keep your same weight and strength. Mm-hmm. So, like, you shrink down and you're still as strong as you are.
Yeah, he says that he's changing the distance between either atoms themselves or the parts of atoms. And I'm like, sure, whatever. So you're super duper dense when you're tiny. And I guess you're not dense when you're big. So you're wobbly?
Yeah. So that's where things get a little confusing. The first time we see Giant Man is in Civil War. And it's cool, but it doesn't make sense. Because if you yourself got thrown against an airplane, you wouldn't dent the airplane. You also wouldn't be able to pick up the airplane. You're not strong enough, right? So when Scott is big and he gets thrown into the airplane and it, like, crushes the airplane, that doesn't make sense. Because wouldn't he weigh, even though he's getting bigger, he still retains his mass. So
does the embiggening process work differently?
I guess so. I have to assume so. They never really explain it.
Maybe the suit is somehow special and can be, like, heavier or more massive or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's magic.
So, well, I don't want to get too much into the big because we don't have that in this movie, but we do have the small. And in the small, they show off that you keep your same weight and stuff by when he falls out of the tub after he puts on the suit for the first time. And he lands on the ground, it cracks the tile. Because we're supposed to think, okay, even though he's really tiny, he's super dense, and he weighs as much as however much Scott Lang weighs. Okay.
One paw run.
Right. So, okay, I buy it. Fine. Now let's talk about the fact that Hank Pym is carrying around a shrunken tank on a keychain throughout the entire movie. How does the keychain not weigh multiple tons? Because the tank would keep its same. It's just like the car box in the second movie. They have a box full of little cars. It doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. You've already explained to us that stuff keeps its weight and its mass, even though it shrinks. And now I'm supposed to believe just because it's shrunk, you can carry around 30 cars in, like, a toy plastic case.
Hey, no one knows. It's a mystery. Unless it's some kind of special tank that's made out of ultra lightweight stuff, so it just looks really scary, but it's not.
Maybe.
It's an intimidation tactic rather than a practical use of heavy machinery.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's just it's so confusing.
And And it's okay. It's okay. It doesn't have to. Yeah. It doesn't have to make sense.
Yeah.
We're here for small antics, large antics.
That's a good one. So yeah, physics aside, because I just don't get it. I think the idea of a Marvel heist movie is fun no matter what. So the fact that we get this heisty vibe to the whole movie is so much fun. Even to the point where the heist music that they use when they're like planning.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Their heist is the same music that they use when in Endgame when they're planning their time heist. They have the same little do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do in the background, and it's like, oh, that's because it was so good, because they need to, like, heist movie. Who doesn't like a heist movie, right? It's always fun. You don't like heist
movies? There's a heist movie that, okay, I don't have a problem with heist movies in general, but one of the worst movies I've ever seen in a theater was a heist movie,
which
was Hurricane Heist.
Well,
I mean, I should not have been surprised. I at least expected it to be so bad it was fun, but it wasn't. And also, you would think that a movie with that kind of title and like the setup is that they're using a hurricane as the cover to go and do a heist, that we would be following the heisters. Instead, we're following the boring people trying to stop the cool heist.
Yeah, well, then that's not a heist movie. That's a stopping the heist movie. And that's never
a
stopping.
It was a heist movie bait and switch. They put heist in the title, and then we're not following the fun bunch of like redneck Floridian gangsters who are trying to rob this place during a hurricane.
You're making me want to watch this movie.
I'm not trying to, because
now I know
the thing I just said makes it sound better than it is, because it should have been fun. We should have been, you know, following the greasy group of people who were heisting during a hurricane, because that's the smartest idea they could come up with. And oh, we're following all the boring people, like that girl from Lost or whatever. And they're like, we have to stop them.
No,
you don't. Yeah. They're going to stop themselves.
Yeah, just let it happen. Well, I do hope that they kind of stick with this heisty theme for Ant-Man movies. I know the second movie isn't heisty, but it's still sort of like, they got to sneak around and he's got to be slick, sly Ant-Man. So I hope they keep that in this, this next one.
And for Ant-Man being slick and sly, one of my favorite things about this movie is the dynamic between Scott and Hank, because Hank is, of course, a super genius. He's a scientist who's invented absolutely insane technology that they use for the Ant-Man suit. And Scott is also an incredibly intelligent person, but just seems like a dumbhead up beside all these people.
Yes. He's a perfect match. Yeah. Right now we're talking about the cool vibes between Scott and Hank.
I mean, make that into its own short. Give us more of that.
If they would make an Ant-Man heist series, it was just like Ant-Man and Luis, and Hank could be like they could be heisting like stuff from Hydra or something, you know, like it doesn't have to be they're stealing, just stealing stuff.
Did y'all say that they are releasing Scott's autobiography later this year?
Okay.
No.
So that's okay. I saw.
It's real. It is real. I ordered it.
Okay, that's awesome. I saw that circulating in like film Twitter, and I was like, back in my mind, I was like, is that serious? That has to be like some ongoing gag. It's the real deal, huh?
Yeah, and it's regrettably not the podcast that we wanted.
Yeah, but we still haven't got. the podcast better be in the new movie. That's all I'm saying. It's got to be. Even if it's just like the first 3 minutes of the movie.
Well, I think it is, because I think in the teaser trailer we see him walking on the red carpet, and there's like the Ant-Man podcast like symbol behind them. So gotcha. I think that it is like, I think it is supposed to be like real world, or not, I guess real world, whatever, Marvel world, a real podcast. So it's just weird to me. I feel like that would be easier to do than write an autobiography, right? Like someone had to sit down and write an autobiography for Scott Lang.
Maybe we will be gifted with both. That would be nice. Even like a little short episode thing, I would be 1,000% about it.
Yeah, give us like the Baby Groot show.
Yeah.
Like do that, like that, you know, they could be 5-6 minutes long, but just clips or just like subjects of the Ant-Man podcast. And that could be it. It could be 8 6-minute episodes.
You know, Brie Larson has a podcast. Why doesn't she bring on Marvel characters to her podcast?
What just is saying. Podcast about?
I think her, so her podcast is like with I think her best friend, who is I think it's Jonah Hill's sister. And I think they just talk about like life and stuff like that.
Mm. Well, then yes, they should just.
I don't know if they're still doing that podcast though, but I'll try to look it up real quick.
Well, if they aren't, then here's your chance, Brie. Start a new one. You just interview Marvel characters,
right?
Yeah.
Like between
two ferns.
She's
not busy enough.
Did they? I guess they ended it. Maybe. Hang on. Whoop. Sorry.
Be like between two Marvel characters. I don't know. I'm 100% on board. I would listen to the Scott. I know there's a Squirrel Girl podcast, and I listened to that for a little while, and it was funny, but it wasn't enough because we don't have Squirrel Girl yet. Right. Yeah. Like if she was a character in the MCU and they could reference more things in the MCU, I feel like maybe it would draw me in a little bit more, but that wasn't the case. So I kind of fell out of that one, but Scott Lang Ant-Man podcast, I'm into it. another cool moment in this is because this is all pre Disney series, we get a cool fight with Falcon.
Mm-hmm.
Like classic Falcon too, not yeah. even like cool new Falcon. And we get to see some of the Avengers compound, like the beginnings of the Avengers compound when they've gone away from Stark Tower, and are now like, oh, we got this cool compound we're going to use instead. And I saw online somewhere that if you look, you can see the scorch mark on the ground from when Thor uses the Bifrost, when they like do the flyover shot of the compound as they're trying to break
in. I need
in.
To go
and
back.
Like,
those little things I need to go back and look for.
Yeah. It's like, what a cool little detail to include. I never would have even remembered. Like,
so now that brings up the question is, when Thor uses the Bifrost, how long do those scorch marks last?
I mean, I guess you just have to think about it like it just like burns it into the ground. So yeah. I guess however long you would have like a burned patch of grass.
It's like you have the cleanup crew that just like mows over it or something.
Well, and it happens on the cement too. Right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. That seems permanent.
Right.
Yeah, I was about to say, since the Bifrost is magical, I like the idea of them being permanent. And just so, like, over the centuries, there's all these, like, random scorch marks all over Earth whenever Thor would come down to, like, party for a little bit and then leave.
Do you think he ever tries to come to the same spot twice, though, and it's, like, a little bit off? So then there's, like, one scorch mark, but then one on top of it that's, like, a little askew?
He probably does, and I bet he goes like 200 years apart because he doesn't really think about human time that much. So he's like, no, I know this great little place. And he comes back and he's like, what? It's totally different. It was right here.
It's like somebody's living room now. There is a moment. I know we're kind of, you know, talking about all the fun moments in the movie, but there is a moment that potentially will come back in Quantumania or in some future Marvel something near the end of the movie, end-ish of the movie, I guess. There's this government bad guy, I guess we'll call him, Carson. And he takes some of the Yellow Jacket PIM particles and runs away.
I'm talking about Mitchell Carson?
Yes.
Yeah, he got a deeper role in like the Marvel world, right?
Yes. So he took these particles, and then we've never seen him again. So someone has the Yellow Jacket particles. I don't know what for. I don't know when they're going to come back. I don't know if it was just Marvel like safeguarding, like in the future if we don't know what to do. Oh yeah, remember we stole the particles? We could do that.
Thunderbolts.
So
I don't know.
Interesting you say that, because in the second movie, which will be next week's episode, so I'll just tease a little bit here. There is kind of this strong feeling that we're going to get Cassie taking the role, or yeah, taking the role. What does she turn into? Stature is her hero name. And it would be like a Young Avengers thing. And I know we kind of talked about Thunderbolts being some sort of like Dark Avengers. They're introducing all of these younger characters, so we're thinking that they're kind of slowly phasing out the older characters and bringing in some new people to potentially be the Young Avengers. So maybe. I mean, it's all set up for us. We just don't know what direction they're going to go, because I feel like every time we think they're going to go one way, they take like a sharp left and go the other way. And it's like, oh, so close. We also get some teases. I know, you know, this is obviously, we're talking about this movie years after it's come out. But there are teases in this movie of the Wasp, because, ooh, we want the Wasp, right? And that is what the like big post-credit scene is, where basically Hank says, hey, I got this suit, and it's like, oh, it's the Wasp suit. So it's a little less exciting watching it the second time, because you're like, yeah, I know. But the first time it's like that,
that's
cool,
so
look forward to something.
Yeah. I always like those moments. They still get me.
I enjoy them, but they're less, it's just less.
Now. A little bit, yeah. It's not like the first watch, yeah.
Yeah, because the first watch, you're like, I wonder if they're going to do this, and then it happens, and you're like, oh, yeah, the Wasp. But then as soon as the second movie comes out and the Wasp is all up in it, then it's a little less. You're like, yeah, I know.
So that would be, that'd be an interesting question. I don't know if we've asked this, but since we're getting so close to the start of Phase 5, if you could go back through any of what we've seen, what's one that you would completely erase from memory to have that first watch again?
Oh. Endgame.
Yeah, same.
I mean, it was just like, I love Marvel movies. That was on like another level. Like, It took this like funny, nerdy thing that I would go watch every couple of months or whenever one came out, and turned it into like a true cinematic experience that like I had no clue what was going on. I had no clue what to expect. People were dying and you're like, wait, but they're like a main character and now they're dead? And then people came back from the dead and you're like, oh, they're back from the dead? what is happening? Oh, it was great.
It's a good pick. I think I have to go Iron Man.
Oh, oh yeah. Good one.
I mean, you know, Iron Man kind of kicked us all off, and that's one, like, if you just can completely erase your memory and then have that first watch experience, it's a special watch.
This is a good one.
Yeah.
It is so, it's so different,
yeah,
too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, think about where Marvel is now versus, yep, where Marvel was.
Yep.
Well, before we wrap this episode up, I do want to say I just watched Wakanda Forever. It's on Disney Plus now.
Mm-hmm.
And still good. Still good.
The Steelbook,
uh-huh,
looks amazing.
I'll have to look it up. I haven't seen it.
It's incredible. I've got to get a copy of it. It is beautiful.
I am still trying to find, because of course now they're really hard to find.
Mm-hmm.
I have the like Infinity Stone collection, mm-hmm, for Phase 2. So it's like a stand, and it comes with the ball from Guardians that you can open, and inside is an Infinity Stone.
Yes.
And you can like turn a little light on. The battery's dead. But Phase 1 is the Tesseract, and it comes in like a shield suitcase. Phase 3, I think, is where they messed it up, because Phase 3 is Thanos' gauntlet. So it's like, oh, but we only have 2 Infinity Stones. It's weird that you would jump the gun there. And I don't know what Phase 4 is.
Hmm.
So I need to look it up. But my goal is to have all of these as the collection. And it came with like so much stuff. Like, this is the thing that I have on display, but it came with like this whole pack. There's a Auntie's wing on like a little like a petri dish card thing. It came with all these like secret files from S.H.I.E.L.D. It's wild. If you're like a big Marvel fan and you like just weird collectibles that you don't know what to do with, you should look up the Phase collections, because it's insane the amount of stuff that comes in.
Yes, I need this Tesseract briefcase of which you speak.
It's huge too. It's like,
yes.
But yeah. Well, I'll have to like take some. I'll have to find the little packet that I have all the collectible stuff in, and take some posts, some pictures to post. But anyway, back to Ant-Man. although kind of Auntie's wing, Ant-Man. Great movie, exciting start to this story that we're like still kind of following, and interesting to see some things that like may come back versus things that like are very clearly meant to set up Ant-Man and the Wasp. So you'll have to join us for Ant-Man and the Wasp to find out what other things may have popped up that we could potentially see in Quantumania. So do you guys have any last thoughts on Ant-Man?
I know I was kind of late to joining this one, but I love the comedy. I mean, just seeing like the if you look at like the portfolio that Paul Rudd has, you know, he's one of those like, okay, he's gonna be a superhero, this could be really interesting, and he just, mm-hmm, does such a fantastic job and really just pulls off this character, and just the chemistry with like all the little side characters in this, yeah, I just want more of that in Quantumania, because we definitely get more of that in Ant-Man and the Wasp. But and even like the height, like when this came out, was like so big for like other shows and stuff. So like I'm trying to think of the actor's name, who was Darren Cross. What was the actor's name? Corey Stahl.
What's his name? Was that
Corey
right?
Stahl? Yeah. So like, because I think when Ant-Man came out, like House of Cards was still like big on Netflix before all that crazy stuff happened with Spacey and all that. But yeah, like I really liked Corey Stahl and his acting, so it was exciting to get to see him play the villain. I thought he was a great villain. He just pulled that role off so well. So yeah, I mean, this is definitely one I like to revisit quite often.
Well, it only gets better when the Wasp joins in. So join us next week as we break down Ant-Man and the Wasp as we are on the road to getting ready for Quantumania. Question this week will be if you... Oh, no, I think we already did that.
Wait, I've got one. What is your favorite flavor of Baskin-Robbins ice cream?
Perfect question. Send your answers to us on social media. And
just know they know everything already, so
they do.
Don't lie.
You're not telling them anything new.
See you guys next week.